The masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Very well.
Where would we be without THC? 'Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
Hello again, Irish Side Chatters. How the hell are you? Drinking a little drink and smoking a little smoke from sunny San Diego. I'm Greg Carlwood, and today is the return of a guest I really liked the first time around, fellow podcaster Jen Briney of Congressional Dish. And I thought it was a great time to have her back because when you look at a lot of the legislation now, we're seeing the push towards total corporate control and landmark conflicts and laws that will set the precedent in the future are happening now. And a savvy mind can hear what's in these documents and in these trade agreements and read between the lines and cut straight to the core of the conspiratorial tiptoe. So I think it's a great thing to examine once in a while, and nobody dissects it better than Jen. We did record the show a few weeks ago. I feel bad because I hung on to it for so long, but I did not expect all those conference guests, and I had to fit them in before their big day. But one thing that I think has changed since we recorded this is we were talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I believe now they have actually locked in the final verbiage, and now it's just one step closer to ramming that thing through. But it is important to note that that change has happened. But here we are, back in the saddle, kicking off November. Let's get into it, telling it like it is, my friend and yours, Jen Briney. Bring us in, plate scrapers.
Pack it and park it, tune in and spark it, 'cause Greg's about to open up your mind. Armed with information about the secret manipulation and the wisest aficionados he can find. And he's pulling back the curtain on what we thought we knew for certain, so we can see the world with a brand new set of eyes. You're listening to the Higher Side.
All right, people, we know the shadowy elite have been working towards total global control for generations, and with things like government corruption and corporate power reaching new bold levels, it's getting easier to follow their moves on the big chessboard we call home and see these various pieces of the plan start to fall into place. Yet with so many people screaming from the rafters that the sky is falling, very few have tackled the daunting task of actually reading and understanding the legislation these overlords have been pushing through, including those who vote on it. And with billions spent on lobbying, buying up the government, and ensuring the media always turns a blind eye, that should tell us what's written on that paper is pretty important. And thanks to today's guest, we actually know what some of it says. Jen Briney is the host of Congressional Dish, where she reads and researches the congressional record and all the bills that pass either the House or the Senate, and reports on that information in a clear, more digestible way. She's been here once before, just about a year ago, and I thought it was time we check on her once again. Jen, thanks so much for being here. Welcome back to THC.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. You've had some great shows lately, breaking down all the bills they've tried to pass and some that they actually did over the summer, and some of these international treaties, which seem to be big red flags. But before we really get into the details, let me ask you in more of a broad sense what you've seen in the past year. Bigger and bolder theft and corruption, I'd assume?
You know, actually, the 114th Congress hasn't been as bad as I thought it would be. I mean, that doesn't mean that it's good, but I was expecting more corruption than I've seen. So yeah, I'm actually pleasantly surprised with what I've seen, but everything's getting weird now. I mean, the 114th Congress only started in January, but we just had an almost shutdown, and then the Speaker of the House just resigned. And so I think the weirdness is just about to start. In the first Congress that I did, the 113th, things got weird in the summer. So this one's just a little bit delayed. But yeah, it's about to get a little freaky, especially there's no one really left that can replace Boehner, that can really be on both sides of the Republican Party, like the one side that cares about governing and then the other side that's really quite reckless. I think we're going to get a more reckless speaker. That's my guess. And so, yeah, I think the craziest stuff is yet to come. I really do.
Wow. Yeah. what do you think of John Boehner's retirement? I mean, was that surprising to you? Do you think he's probably just going to work in the public sector? Or do you think something might have been coming down the pike that was going to put pressure on him and he wanted to bow out gracefully? What do you think was behind all that?
It was yes and no. It was surprising. It was surprising in that it happened in the middle of his term and the way that it did, where he just out of nowhere just said, okay, I'm not only out of the speakership, I'm out of Congress. I didn't see that coming, but I'm not surprised that he's leaving because he's had to deal with some pretty crazy stuff in the last 5 years as speaker, and everybody's blaming him for things that aren't really his fault. I mean, in 2010, half of the Republican Party became these people that know very little about governing, and they'll pick a topic. So like last year or 2 years ago, it was Obamacare. They just had to repeal it. And now it's Planned Parenthood. They want to defund it, but they'll pick something and they're willing to go to the brink to get their way. And it's just a really reckless way of governing. And so he's been in this position of trying to hold together not only the party, but also keep Congress functioning. And it's just really hard. And my take on it is that he just quit. You know, there might be some kind of scandal that we don't know about yet. But the reason I don't really think that's the case is that after he resigned, he threw a party. They were calling it the Boehnerland Bash. And he had cases of beer and pizza and all this stuff delivered. And they partied until the middle of the night. So this isn't a man who's going out like in shame. He's like a second semester senior, a weight off his shoulder. He's throwing a party. I think he's just done. And he's going to make so much money as a lobbyist someday. And so I think he's just served his time. He's amassed as much power as he needs to go into the private sector and make boatloads. And I don't really blame him for getting out of this situation. It was just an ugly job to have.
Right.
It's selfish, though. I do have to say that. Like, leaving at this time is just not good for the country, because I don't know who's going to hold it together better than he did. So,
well, you know, I think all these guys are pretty selfish to a degree. I think that's why they get involved, or even if they start in government for the right reasons, there's so many temptations and nobody stays informed enough to hold them accountable. So they just think, let me grab what I can while I'm here. But I sometimes have to laugh at these politicians who are 50, 60 years old, and they're already multimillionaires, yet they still have to go and clock in every day. They still have to go to meetings. They're still on the treadmill. And I say the same thing about the Rockefellers. I mean, David Rockefeller is 100 years old, and he's still apparently involved in these high-level backdoor meetings. It's like, just go home, man. Just retire and relax.
Yeah, that's what I would do. But I guess we don't understand the mindset of the rich and the powerful.
Right. Well, maybe it is that ego. They just can't give up the addiction to power, I guess. But last time we talked, you really were the one who put the Trans-Pacific Partnership on my radar, which, to remind the people, is a trade agreement that gives unprecedented levels of power to the big multinational corporations and puts their profits over the laws and regulations of a nation. It is pretty creepy stuff. I'm definitely more educated on it now than I was then, but I'm still a bit hazy on the state of the TPP. Where is it in the process of actually becoming law?
You know, it's really not that much different, the TPP itself, than it was last year, because they haven't worked out a lot of provisions. There's countries that are actually fighting back against things like patents for pharmaceuticals, and there are just issues that haven't been solved. And so the TPP isn't done yet, but it's in a better place to become law than it was last year, because our Congress passed something called Fast Track. And so what Fast Track does is it allows trade agreements, not only the TPP, but also larger ones that are being negotiated right now. It allows all of them until probably 2021 to have an easier, faster path towards becoming law. So what it does is it says that when it comes up for a vote, Congress is not allowed to amend it. It limits the debate. And it's pretty much like the whole thing passes or none of it does. So it really takes away Congress's ability to change anything that's been negotiated by the executive branch. And technically, it only goes until July 2018. But the process for renewing the Fast Track is so easy. Basically, the president just has to write a letter. And if Congress does nothing, it's extended until 2021. So what that means is that this easier, faster path for trade agreements is going to be for at least the end of Obama's term, for the entire first term of the next president, and possibly 6 months of the next president if the next person who wins is only a one-termer. So this whole Fast Track thing was a big old mess, and unfortunately it's now law. And so our Congress really limited their own ability to do anything about these international treaties other than say no entirely, which so far they've never done.
Yeah, these international treaties seem to be the new battleground. And if it wasn't bad enough with them passing things like the bailout bill that are, you know, hundreds of pages that people can't even read, Congress is told, you know, if this doesn't pass now, everybody's screwed. And so, of course, they're like, well, what can I do? And now they've made that even easier, which is sad. But the needle keeps moving. The goalpost keeps getting further away. Seems like they're just tiptoeing towards total control. And they're putting the framework in place right now.
Yes, especially since we've passed Fast Track, because Fast Track isn't just for TPP, it's for any trade agreements that are being negotiated. And so everyone's focusing on TPP, which is involving 12 countries. But we're also negotiating a trade agreement between us and the European Union. And we're also negotiating one called TISA, which is between us and the TPP countries and the European Union countries. At my count, the last time I checked, it was 52 countries that are involved in this. And no one's even talking about that trade agreement. And so what I see happening is that these trade agreements are creating a worldwide system for really dealing with how we interchange money. And that's fine. You know, we do have a global system now, but it matters what the rules are. And that's what's so concerning, is that all of these negotiations are happening behind closed doors. And the system that is judge and jury is the World Trade Organization and their system, which has corporate lawyers serving as the judges, and there's no appeal process. And so there's an undemocratic system being created in these behind closed doors negotiations. And our Congress is really surrendering their right to do anything about it, to change the negotiations, to make it at any more democratic, to have it be something that's modeled on our own system. So this whole world trade thing, it's being created fast and furiously. And I don't think most of the people in this country or even in this world really know what's going on. We certainly don't know the details.
Right. You did an episode that was really good where you dug super deep into the World Trade Organization, which is important because it seems like they are able to enact rules and regulations that are trumping the laws of countries and U.S. law, which seems pretty one world government-y to me.
It does. And I was called a conspiracy theorist by one person after that episode, but most of the reactions have been pretty good, because I try and look at facts, you know, and not really let myself go too far down rabbit holes. But when it comes to the World Trade Organization, I was looking at this bill, and it was our Congress repealing our food safety law, the one that when you go and you buy beef or chicken or vegetables or whatever, you can find out what country they come from. It's called country of origin labeling. And they're repealing those labels because the World Trade Organization told them they had to. And so when I read that bill, it just led to this whole, well, why are we doing something because the World Trade Organization says so? And that's what led me down this rabbit hole to look into the World Trade Organization. Where did it come from? What is this system? Who creates it? Who runs it? And I didn't really like what I saw. And so that was the second to last episode. And yeah, it's all really fascinating. And so when people say New World Order, One World Government, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's happening. And I think people are uncomfortable with that reality, because it does sound so scary, and it sounds so devious. I don't think the people involved are trying to create a bad system, but I think that the people that are creating it are doing so in a way that really benefits themselves and benefits the companies that they work for, and really isn't great for all of the workers. So it's not necessarily the fact that a one world system is being created that's nefarious. We live in a time now that this podcast can be heard by people all over the world. This is one rock that we're all calling home. So that's not the issue. We all need rules. It matters who's writing them. It matters why they're writing them. It matters what the rules are. And it matters what our role in the process is. And in the process of creating these rules, we have no role. And we also have no way to challenge them. And so that was my problem with the World Trade System as I saw it, as I researched it. It's not a democratic system. It's not based on the system that we have here in the United States. And it's not something that I want to see expanded behind closed doors.
Yeah, of course not. And that is a criticism I get too, is whenever there's a solution that proposes bringing people together under sort of one umbrella, Everybody sounds the alarms and raises the red flags, but you're right, that isn't necessarily bad. I mean, we are a global community. I wish the world was more like the United States in the sense that I can live in Florida and go to Colorado whenever I want. Now, I don't have to check in with anybody. I don't have to sign any special documents. I just go. Yeah. And the rules in Florida and the rules in Colorado are radically different, especially if you like marijuana. So I want to see a world where we can travel freely wherever we want to go. And the only passport we need is our flesh and blood. I'm obviously a person. And why can't I freely travel? You know, I like the idea of a one world community. It's just, it really does matter who is running that community.
Exactly. Exactly. But there's people that just don't even think that that's happening. I think the World Trade Organization, I mean, it's new. And that's a part that I didn't understand either. The World Trade Organization was not a thing in 1993. It was created like very recently. And so I think that's the part that kind of blew me away, is that this system is being created not behind closed doors. I mean, we knew that this was happening. There was people that protested it in Seattle. It's kind of on the news, but we have so much fluff being told to us that it's really been, that's the problem with it being done in plain sight, but also kind of hidden. Because if you say World Trade Organization in polite company at a party, you're going to get a lot of blank stares. They either don't know what it is at all, or they don't understand the significance of it. And so that's one of the problems. How do you change a system, or how do you get your Congress to be more involved in a system that's being created if you don't even know it's being created? That's part of my frustration. I don't necessarily think that it's evil, or the people that are doing it are evil. Like, I don't really believe in evil to begin with. But we are so unaware of what's happening in the world that we're letting it happen, and we're losing our sovereignty to this system, and we're not even aware of it. And our Congress isn't fighting back. What they did when the World Trade Organization ruled against our country of origin labels is that they passed a bill to repeal them. They didn't go through all of the appeal processes. They didn't get all of the lawyers and all of the arguments for our labels. They're not fighting for our laws. They're just rolling over to the World Trade System's dictates. And yeah, and I had no idea that was happening until I started reading the actual bills. I should be able to get this information by opening a newspaper, and I'm not.
Right. You're doing the job of the entire media establishment when you're just one person. But so this World Trade Organization, who makes up this group? I guess it all started with the Bretton Woods Conference, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. So it was basically all the people that won World War II. They got together and decided, how are we going to run the world? Which, like I said in the episode, is not an unreasonable thing to do. And so they wanted three things. They wanted the World Bank, they wanted the International Monetary Fund, and they wanted an international trade organization. Well, our Congress didn't go along with the International Trade Organization back in the 1940s. And so that's how we ended up with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. But the World Trade Organization, which is, you know, the next, it is the International Trade Organization with a different word as the first word. But we didn't get that until 1994, because our Congress back in the 1940s was aware of what we were signing on to. We were signing on to a world system that affected our sovereignty, and our Congress said no. And so once all of those people were out of office and we have these new people, they said yes in the 1990s, and Bill Clinton signed it into law. But yeah, it all started around the same time as a lot of creepy stuff. Yeah, it all lines up. It's kind of fascinating, isn't it?
Right. I mean, the International Monetary Fund comes up here quite often. I have a lot of guests talking about that. It is a little bit creepy because over half the nations of the planet are in debt to it. And of course, they have ridiculous interest rates and fees you can never really repay. They've got the world by the balls, it seems, as long as we're playing by the rules of green paper.
That's a really good way to put it. And the International Monetary Fund, they don't just give out loans. They always have conditions on these loans that these countries change their economic laws to match the world trade system. So it all is connected. You know, if you need money and you go to the International Monetary Fund, they're going to say, okay, you can have it, but you have to privatize your airports and your ports and your banks. And, you know, it's all working for the same thing. And unfortunately, I do think that this system is run by the owners of multinational corporations. They don't really care about countries, and they're not too concerned about workers' conditions. You know, we're labor, you know, we're not people. And so they're not really trying to make everything great and harmonious for all of the people. They're trying to make the laws open to for business in every company in every country, and make it easier for every country.
Freudian slips.
I know. They're trying to make it easier for these companies to go into any country that they wish, extract their national resources, use the labor for as cheap as possible, make as much money as possible, and have as few rules as possible. That's not a world system that I think is designed for us. And when I look at this system that they're creating, that seems to be the effect. If not the intent, I mean, I don't know what their intent was, but that's what the effect is. We've had enough years, we've had enough experience in looking at what the International Monetary Fund does to know what the results are going to be. And it's going to be privatization and lower wages. And in the United States, I mean, we had a lot of laws protecting our wages and giving us health care. And so that's why you're seeing companies moving overseas. That's what opening borders and lowering trade barriers is all about. It's making it easier for these companies to make money and not do it with our labor if they're selling us products here in the United States. It's disturbing if you're a United States citizen.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, this is something I thought we were past, but I do get people who write me still and ask if I support Hillary Clinton. And they kind of write me as if they assume that I would. And I don't know where anybody gets that. But since Bill Clinton did sign the World Trade Organization into law, I mean, how in bed with them is Hillary?
Oh, she was negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership as Secretary of State. In fact, in my World Trade episode, I really have been trying to stay out of the 2016 presidential election. It's not for a year and a half. I don't care. Right. But when it comes to Hillary Clinton, while I was researching that, she said I had nothing to do with the TPP. And I had a clip of her in Singapore with the president of Singapore and all of their most important politicians pushing the TPP. I mean, this woman was Secretary of State. She was the highest diplomat that we have. And she was negotiating with this other country saying, this is good for you. This is what we're trying to do. She's a liar. And so she's definitely on board with these trade agreements. Her husband signed not only NAFTA into law, but also the World Trade Organization. This family is deeply involved in this. And so for anyone to think that Hillary Clinton is going to fight it, it's insane. Like, no, they're definitely involved.
Right.
People like her because she has a D next to her name, because she's a Democrat. And it's like, these parties don't mean anything either, because the Democrats have signed these trade agreements into law, and so have the Republicans. And that's the part that makes me crazy, too. Partisanship in this country means Democrat versus Republican. We're not looking at it as people that are working for multinationals and people that are working for workers. I think that's really the big divide.
Oh, well said. Well said. I definitely agree that that is the divide. And it is an interesting side note that Bernie Sanders is one of the people who did vote against the World Trade Organization.
He's the only one. I looked through all of the people that are still in Congress and how they voted in 1994 on the World Trade Organization. He was the only person still in Congress who voted no. It's unbelievable. Like,
wow.
Yeah. So he's, when it comes to the 2016 election, he has a very good chance of getting my vote, at least in the primary, because he has stood up to this system, and I'm happy for that.
Yeah. And you also did play some pretty spot on clips in that episode from Ralph Nader, too. He seemed to have been trying to warn everybody a decade ago, but nobody cared to listen.
Yeah. And that was a surprise, because all I did was go on to C-SPAN and pretty much download anything I could about the World Trade Organization from 1994. And he just kept popping up. I wasn't looking for him, but he testified to Congress and he talked on C-SPAN's, you know, their like Washington Journal show, and he was everywhere. And what I found fascinating is that C-SPAN invited Ralph Nader and some libertarian guy from a think tank, and they both agreed that this was surrendering our sovereignty. So this is one of those issues that isn't partisan. You know, people who are paying attention, they knew back then and now that this system trumps our own. So yeah, it was fascinating how all over this he was, and that he told a specific story. He said, this could be the repercussion. We might have to repeal our laws. And it was almost exactly what was happening right now with our country of origin labels. So when you look at someone say something 20 years ago and they're right, I tend to look to that person again for my information, and he's still saying these trade agreements are a problem.
Right. Yeah, it's got to be so frustrating to be ahead of the curve like that. You got to feel like you're in the Twilight Zone speaking out about something that nobody seems to care about. Everybody's eyes glaze over. That's definitely frustrating. Another big example you could point to where we're seeing corporations trump nations in power is Philip Morris. I mean, Philip Morris, a cigarette company right now, I think they're suing two or three different countries because they say these countries put so many regulations on cigarettes, so many regulations on their marketing that it's hurt sales. And you can't make regulation that hurts corporate sales. And that is asinine. I mean, that's ridiculous, but that battle's playing out right now too.
Yeah, and that's all because of trade agreements. It was Australia that put a plain packaging law into place. And so if you buy cigarettes in Australia, it's not going to come with like a happy camel on the front. It's going to have plain packaging, or it's going to have pictures of lung cancer. And that was Australia's law. So Philip Morris is technically an American company, but we all know they're multinational. And so they used a trade agreement that Australia had signed with China and got China to sue in the World Trade Organization system. We got China to sue Australia against these plain packaging laws. And I think the lawsuits are still ongoing. But that's exactly the point, that this is something that is for public health and safety. It's to tell teenagers who are thinking about smoking cigarettes, hey, these are the repercussions of it on the actual labels. And in Australia's sovereignty to determine their own laws and to determine what's going to be on the products sold to their kids, that's being challenged right now in this system that we are actively expanding. And so one of the countries that is slowing down the TPP is Australia. They are concerned about signing more of these, as they should be.
Yeah, they should. Man, when you see the depth of this corruption and the corruption in the voting system, if you could mobilize people, where would you focus their efforts to unravel some of this?
The House of Representatives, hands down. Because in our system, the House of Representatives was always the one that was supposed to represent the people, and it's the most local. I think every representative represents, I think, 285,000 people, which sounds like a lot, but compared to the presidency that we're all paying so much attention to, that's the person that cares most about you because your vote counts the most to them. And so I would love to get people to shift their focus from the presidency to the House of Representatives, because that's the person that you can reach the easiest, and that is the branch that controls the money. There's nothing that can be done in this country without the House of Representatives appropriating cash to that cause. And so if you want to change what's going on in this country, that's how you do it. Also, the House of Representatives, you can fire every one of them every 2 years, a fact that I don't think a lot of people are aware of, that every one of them is up for election every 2 years. And so they're constantly trying to get your vote. And it's also the fastest path for change. So if we could spread this idea that we get new people in the House of Representatives, it's a 2-year turnaround. We really don't need to wait as long as we do for the presidency and then the Senate. They are elected every 6 years. But in the House of Representatives, we can make a very big change very fast, and the people could control the money again if we just started paying attention to our own representatives and voting. We're not voting. So that's where I would focus my attention, and that's why I focus my attention on the House of Representatives. In the last 6 months, I have started reading the bills that passed the Senate too. Luckily for me, they don't do much work. But I focus very hard in the House of Representatives. That's still my boo, if you will. And that's the reason, because that is where we can affect the most change federally, the most efficiently.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's kind of funny because all the time we talk about all these things going wrong and people are like, what do we do? What do we do? And you say something like that, say something like get involved in government, and people are like, oh, don't give me that. We need to actually fix things. And I mean, how else are you going to do it? You have to somewhat get involved. I heard your interview with Jack Abramoff, one of the most famous DC lobbyists, and that was pretty insightful. And even he said, from the horse's mouth directly, he said that making calls to your congressman really does make a difference. It makes the lobbyist's job a lot harder. And that's from one of the premier guys. So take his advice and make their jobs harder, people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was that was great to hear, because I had always suspected that, but to hear it from Jack himself was amazing. And it made me feel empowered.
I also, you asked him about being friendly with these politicians, and I loved his term, well, it's a friendship of convenience.
Yeah, but it makes perfect sense, because the minute he got in trouble, everybody turned their back on him. And I know, I mean, you have to remember, Jack Abramoff is still a person, and he was trading on his friendships. And when those friendships dissolved so quickly and there were so many people trashing him, I think he was personally hurt by that, you know? And he's said so in other interviews. But yeah, it's a dirty business right now in politics. I don't think it has to be that way, but the way that it's done with the exchange of money being what people think matters, I think that's what's made it so ugly. But it's not the money that matters. You have to remember, when a corporation or a rich person or whoever gives money to a politician, well, what do they use that money for? They're using it to court your vote. They're using it for advertisements. They're using it for that crap they send you in the mail. Yes, they are throwing themselves open bar parties, but those are mainly to get more money. But really, the goal of all the money, the reason that we think Hillary Clinton making $28 million last month was such a big deal is because she can afford more ad time. She can afford more stuff in the mail. So what that tells me is that they're still just courting your votes. You know, she thought she had it in the bag in 2008, but we voted for Barack Obama. Remember That's how true. Long she held on? Like, she just wouldn't let it go. She's like, but wait, it's my turn. But us voters, we were the ones who decided who that president was, not the money, because she did have more money. So, yeah, it's all about our votes. It really is. And the other thing that I want to emphasize is there's a lot of people, I hear it all the time, that say, well, government is the problem. I don't want to participate. Government is a tool. It's not a problem. Government is the most powerful tool that we have to change our society. And so if you're allowing other people to use that tool and you're just sitting back, well, then whatever they build is what you're going to get. If you're not chipping in and using it yourself, you have no control. So allowing other people to use government, that's not the way to do this. You have to think about it in that you get a piece, you know, like you get to hold on to a little piece of this government that changes your whole society. And if you just surrender that, well, you're going to get what other people want. It's not wise to let other people control it.
It's not. And that sounds so obvious, but a lot of us are ignorant and apathetic, which plays right into their hands. But another thing critics of voting would say is, how much control do we really have when an unaccountable private company like Diebold makes the voting machines?
It's true, but even that, like, Diebold is able to have electronic voting machines all over the country because we have hired people to make the laws who made that legal. So if we change the House of Representatives, first of all, we're not going to give any money to the Diebold machines. We could easily say that every ballot in this country needs to be a paper countable ballot. This is all stuff that can be changed. Anything that's done can be easily undone, especially when you control the money. And so all these things that we're mad about, and we say, oh, this government's so out of control, we've allowed it to get out of control. We've allowed people that are untrustworthy to get control of our government. And the goal now needs to be to find people we trust to get into office to make things better. And that's the part where I think our generation in particular is doing a very poor job as of right now, because we're sitting on the sidelines and the numbers back me up. The people that are voting are the same people who have been voting for 40 years, the baby boomers and our grandparents' generation. We're still not showing up. I mean, Greg, we're both in California. People under the age of 22, so like college-age people, 18 to 22, we had an 8% turnout rate for those people in the last election. So that's depressing on one hand, but it's also a huge untapped voting block. So if those 92% that just did nothing in the last election, if they actually showed up, that's a lot of votes for other people. So I actually have a ton of hope now that I actually know the numbers. And now that I know how few of us do vote, because it means that the people that are sitting on the sidelines can jump in and make a huge, huge difference.
That is true. And you can be very inspirational on these kinds of things. You make it seem very hopeful and very easy.
It is easy. Voting's so easy. Like, you just, okay, you can go online right now to the USPS, which is the US Post Office. Go online and register to vote. It'll cost you a dollar. You can do it by changing your address, which is probably the easiest way. It costs you a dollar. And even if you haven't moved, just change your address to what you currently have. The post office doesn't pay that much attention. And then you're registered to vote in your district, and you'll get something in the mail which tells you where to go. You take an hour on one Tuesday every 2 years, and you vote. It's that easy. It really isn't that hard. You don't have to give money to politicians. You don't have to be the person that stands outside with the petitions. Like, you can be involved without making it your whole life. But if you don't vote, you're hurting us, you know? And it is lazy. I have no excuses for people that say they can't vote, because it is incredibly easy to do.
Yeah. I mean, there it is.
So outside of these treaties and fast track and secret backdoor agreements, where else do we see these people sidestepping traditional checks and balances lately?
I mean, honestly, I haven't seen too much overt corruption. It's just the stuff that I'm finding in the bills where they'll pass a bill and it's just so clearly for a company that has given them money. Like, it's amazing how consistent it is that I look at a bill and say, well, who would benefit from this? Oh, an oil and gas company. And then you look up the guy's donations and, oh, look at his number one contributing industry. It's oil and gas. I mean, it happens all the time. Although oil and gas has gotten less love with this Congress than they did in the last one, it's the banking industry that is making out like bandits right now. Wall Street is just, they're doing all kinds of deregulation. And what's concerning is that we're recording this on October 2nd. On September 30th, our government basically ran out of money. And so they did something called a continuing resolution, which means that they take the funding for 2015 and extend it into the 2016 fiscal year. So fiscal years start on October 1st and go till September 30th of the following year. So technically, we're already in 2016. So they extended that until December of 2011. Well, this has happened year after year after year. And so what's happened every single year is they fund the entire government with one bill right before Christmas when no one is paying attention. And they take these bills that couldn't get into law because President Obama has a veto pen. They take these bills, which are often favors to Wall Street and to all kinds of different companies. They attach it to this big bill that funds the entire government. And then it has to be signed into law. So Obama can either, you know, fight these little things that are in it and cause a government shutdown, or he signs things that otherwise would not be signed into law on their own. He signs them into law as like attachments to the budget. And so what we have set up right now is that our government's only been funded through December 11th, right before Christmas. It's gonna happen again. So I've seen a lot of bills that have gotten veto threats, and in general, you would think, oh, okay, like they're not gonna become law. But I've seen this happen before. Every year when they fund the government, they attach stuff to that bill. And I see that happening again. I will be absolutely floored if that doesn't happen in December.
Right. And it being December, that is an interesting point because it is right near the holidays where people aren't going to be paying attention. And we seem like we have no power. We feel like we have no power. But if we didn't, they wouldn't wait for these particular pockets of time to push through this stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. They wouldn't wait until Christmas every single year. And that's the thing. Like, I pay attention to this stuff closer than pretty much anybody. And they've gotten stuff past me because they pass so many bills. It's not just the budget. They also pass the National Defense Authorization into law every December. And that is what tells you what we're doing with all our war money, which is half our discretionary funding. In fact, well over half our discretionary funding. But it's half $1 trillion a year that we're spending on basically bombing other people. That's the bill. It's 1,000 pages, but that's the one that's going to tell you what they're doing. But they pass it at the same time as the budget. So here I am with 2,000 pages now that I'm supposed to read and pick apart. They make it so, so hard. And I think it's done by design. I really do.
Yeah, I really do too. I mean, the Federal Reserve Act, which I think is one of the worst things that we've signed on to, I mean, that was signed on Christmas Eve. And that's the indicator right there. People aren't going to like this, so let's do it while everyone's at home with their families. I think it was only a fraction of the government that was even there to deal with it, but they got it through.
Well, and that's another thing that I've seen, not in this Congress yet, but I've also seen them pass bills through empty rooms because they'll wait until everybody's gone and someone will get up and say, oh, I want to pass this bill, and then no one's there to object. And so it just passes. And it's stunning to me that this stuff is allowed to happen, but it's all allowed to happen because we're not paying attention. If there was an outcry every single time that happened, it would not happen as often as it does, but we're not watching. Mainly because C-SPAN is boring, but you don't need C-SPAN to know this is happening. I don't watch C-SPAN. I do it all by looking through the congressional record. It's all there. And in fact, the one that I use, there's something called the Daily Digest, and it's never any more than 10 pages. And it just tells you, these are the bills that passed. It's very dry. It's just, this is what happened. And any journalist in this country can look at the Daily Digest the same way I do. And it's disturbing to me how few of them actually do, because it's so accessible. It's available the next day. It is possible to get this stuff, and it's not that hard. I am not that smart. if I can do this, anybody can do this. Yet, when I turn on the TV, the few times that I do, the stories that are being talked about are just, I don't know what planet everyone else is living on. my idea of what's happening in government is so different from the mainstream idea. Like, everyone right now is talking about Planned Parenthood. There's been one bill about Planned Parenthood. There's been a lot more deregulating Wall Street. But if you watch the TV, you think that the debate is vastly different from what's actually being legislated. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah, it's either about Planned Parenthood or race or a particular school shooting, and it's nothing about all the huge things they're putting through, the favors for banks, all the things going on the international stage with Russia and China that isn't really making the front page either. Yeah, there's a lot of distraction stories going on.
Like how the whole world seems to be bombing Syria right now. Like, why is everybody bombing Syria? I don't understand it, but that's because I'm not being given much context. You know, anything I do understand, I understand from watching congressional hearings. That's where you get the information. When's the last time you turned on TV and watched a congressional hearing? They're just not airing them. Instead, you get 24 hours of what the Kardashians are up to. And like you said, like Planned Parenthood and the 2016 election. That is the mother of all distractions.
Oh, yeah.
It's a giant pageant. And the problem is most of us have already made up our minds. We don't need this much coverage of these individuals, most of them who won't even be in the race by the time we vote. So that is the biggest distraction. And what really disturbs me is that people think that they're politically aware, if they're aware of what Hillary or Trump or Jeb said recently. And that's become a substitute for knowing what's going on in the country. And it's just, that makes me crazy. There's so many, like, this is a refreshing podcast to go on because there's so many, like, I'll do radio shows all over the country and they'll just be like, so what do you think of the debate last night? And it's like, I didn't watch it. Like, I don't watch The Bachelor either. You know, like, it's become that ridiculous. Even when people get the opportunity to talk to me, they don't. They talk about the pageant. They don't talk about the bills because, quite frankly, they don't know what's in them.
Right.
And it's disturbing to me.
Right. It's such a waste of time. I've also noticed that so many of the bills you've been talking about on your show seem to pass by voice vote, which to my understanding means they aren't even recording who votes what. Is that a newer trend or has that always been a little loophole of theirs?
No, it's called suspension of the rules. And so you don't have to go through the rules committee if there's a bill that's completely uncontroversial. And this has a place in our system because, for instance, the post office has some wacky rules, like you can't rename it without Congress doing it. So there's no reason in the world why we have to have a whole committee meeting about renaming a post office. There is a place for this. But what's happening is, especially in June, which was my last episode, they passed so many large funding bills that I don't think they really had time to read all the little ones. And so they just pass them by voice vote. And what's beautiful about voice vote, if you're a congressman, is there's no accountability because you didn't have to say yes or no. And so there were 30 bills that passed the House of Representatives that I read for the last episode. 21 of them were passed by voice vote. And voice vote happens all the time, but it was extraordinary, the number of them for this last month. I personally think it's unacceptable. I think most votes should have at least, you know, whether the person said yes or no. But yeah, right now, over the summer, they really haven't been doing that.
Last time we did talk a little bit about the idea that you potentially would run for office in the future or mobilize your audience in some way to fight back. Has there been any kind of progress on that front?
Well, I just moved to a new district. And so what I'm doing right now is, my audience and I have been collecting information on how to get on the ballot in all 50 states. And so I will be doing an episode to tell people in the order of the easiest to the hardest, this is how you get on the ballot. And I'll probably do it like really fast. You know, I don't want to make a long, boring episode, but my hope is that in some of the easier states to get people to get their names on the ballot, because there's some where it's 25 signatures and you're in. Like, it's that easy and it's amazing. But here in California, I think right now we're 49th out of 50th in ease of getting onto the ballot, because for me to do so, I would have to collect 3,000 signatures and I would have to win the primary in order to get my name on the ballot, which is crazy. It's really been rigged by the Democratic and Republican parties, because out of our 54 districts, we had 4 people that were not Democrat or Republican that made it onto the actual ballot. So I'm definitely willing to put my name on the ballot. The problem I'm running into now is that my work-life balance is completely out of control. I'm just working all the time and just trying to keep my head above water. So to collect 3,000 signatures and then win a primary in the next 6 months in a district that I've lived in for literally 6 weeks, like, I don't know if that's the best use of my time. One of the things that, like I said, my husband, he's working in a company that he loves right now, and he's still building up his resume. But one of the goals that we have is to get it so that we can live wherever we want and possibly move somewhat frequently. And if we can do that, I'd be willing to move to a place if there's a group of people that want me to represent them. Because what, like, there's a lot of, I mean, I'd obviously be a carpetbagger, I'm aware of that. But if these people are allowed to buy their congressman, why can't a group of people that want me to go and represent their district, why can't I go to their district to do that, you know?
Right.
Or move to a place that, you know, like, I like tornadoes. I'm a freak. So I would move to Oklahoma, and that's one of the places where it's like super easy to get on the ballot. I can go to the grocery store, talk to 100 people, I'm on the ballot, and then go and shake hands in a place that's less populated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid of red states or blue states because I think the red-blue divide is all crap, so I'll go anywhere. That's kind of like how my idea about it, this is shifting, because the show would definitely suffer if I had to do it the California way, and winning the primary, I just don't know how I would do it without calling myself a Democrat or Republican. And I just won't do that.
Yeah.
So, the part I'm going to play in this is to try and encourage congressional district listeners to at least get their name on the ballot, practice for the midterm, because that's where I have my hope, to tell you the truth. In a presidential election, I mean, you can already see it. Turn on the TV right now and you see it's already a circus. But in a midterm election, so few people vote that if we could spread the idea in the internet age of taking over the midterm, so getting a bunch of people who have never voted before to go in the midterms and vote in new people to the House of Representatives, my hope for something like that happening is actually in a midterm election. So the 2018 election is where I'd really like to make a difference and hopefully have the audience to be able to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
But for 2016... I mean, most people, if they're voters, do vote in the presidential election, in the presidential election alone. It's the midterms where we could really mess with them. So that would be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't run in California. Not now.
Got to get creative. But it sounds like you've got a plan. I like it.
Yeah. Trying. I'm disappointed. I mean, I tell people all the time to put their names on the ballot. So for me to be like, nope, can't do it, I do feel shitty about that. I feel like I'm not putting my money where my mouth is, but at the same time, there's only so much time I have. Mm-hmm. And I'm struggling so much already that my choice is really continue congressional dish or not be able to put my name on the ballot. I don't know how I'd win a primary here. I don't know how I would do that. I'd only have 6 months.
There's only so much you can do. Somebody else should step up and run in an honest way, because congressional dish is really great, and to lose it would be a serious disservice, because I really do think you're doing the job of the entire news media. You know, all of them combined, they're supposed to be doing one thing, and that's what you're doing, and they aren't. So it definitely fills a hole that really needs to be there, but great job. I mean, that pretty much brings us to the end of the line, Jen. Thanks again for all you do. Of course, shows like ours both run on funds of those who want to keep them around. I'm glad we both had a pretty good year. Of course, Congressional Dish is the show. Congressionaldish.com is the website. Anything else you'd like to tell the people before we call it in?
No, I just want to thank you for having me back on. This is a great conversation. I love talking to you, Greg.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure. Very cool. Keep doing what you do.
Oh, I take it back. There is one more thing.
Oh, sure.
My Twitter handle, @JenBriney. That's the best way to reach me, and I would love to talk to each and every one of you. I'm obsessed with Twitter, so join me on the Twitter.
Boom. There you have it, people. Contact Jen on Twitter. It's big props to you. Take care of yourself. This has been a pleasure, and I'll talk to you next time.
Sounds great. Thanks. Bye.
All right, guys, there it is. I know that looking into what the government is actually signing and voting on isn't always the sexiest, but you can't deny it's where you see the legislation that actually moves us towards many of the big conspiratorial campaigns we talk about. And I think it's really interesting to see Jen, who really wouldn't consider herself a conspiracy person, getting into the details of the World Trade Organization and just telling it like it is that, yeah, this sort of sounds like the stuff you hear from the conspiracy crowd about the one world government. But I'm confident that in the coming years, you will see the people like Abby Martin and an organization like the Young Turks get a lot more fringe and come out to these weird waters, because it's going to be harder and harder to deny. We will see. But we also talk about here how much of the social conditioning and culture shaping that goes on involves things like developing a negative connotation to a label like conspiracy theorist. I mean, we know this. I embrace it. But they even made truther a negative label. And the point is, you can take someone who normally would tune out conspiracy talk and show them things like the World Trade Organization or the International Monetary Fund and the Trans-Pacific Partnership and bring them around if you know what to point to. And that's what I think a show like this helps to do, to help bridge the gap, because there is a small one. But this show, and by extension Congressional Dish as a whole, is something you could probably show to your parents or your partner or your brother or whoever might need to dip their toe into conspiracy light. Plus, maybe this show was a little self-serving because it's fun to have a guest that's in my age group who also podcasts. Sometimes I feel a bit isolated as the weird conspiracy guy in the podcast community and the weird young stoner in the conspiracy community. I'm a man without a country. But if you enjoyed the show and this surfacing for air from the depths of our typical rabbit hole, in the Plus show, we got more into some of the economic, cybersecurity, and medical-related legislation, as well as a lot of other good stuff. You people know the drill. But also check out Congressional Dish, and I'll see you next week. So be awake. Be ready. I've done all I can. Your move, backdoor wheelers and dealers of the corporate takeover. Your frickin' move.
Well, they tie that yellow ribbon round the oak tree. They've worn out all the prayer in their hearts. All along thought they were rooting for the home team, as they're sent to the game and torn apart. We twist this tourniquet upon the pipeline that he carries all the pain in the as we blindly clap and cheer from the sidelines. It's clear on a losing streak from the very start, and that's where they found me. Smoking gun.